You're on the Money, the daily talk show making the most out of your finances. On the Money features advice from local experts on building wealth, saving and investing, and homes and loans. And now, your host for On the Money.
Good evening, I'm Gary Pomerantz, and I'm here with my colleague Hayden Traub, and you're listening to On the Money, our weekly radio show airing from 6 to 7 each Monday, addressing timely topics of concern to those interested in growing and protecting their wealth.
And I'm Hayden Traub. I'm a CFA and MBA and a practicing investment manager for the past 22 years and principal of my own firm, Traub Capital Management, based here in Needham. And if you'd like more information, you can go to our website at traubcapital.com.
This is Gary Pomerantz. I'm a certified financial planner, and I've been an investment advisor for 14 years. I'm the managing director of Lexington Wealth Management, based in Lexington, Mass. For more information about our firm, please visit our website at www.lexingtonwealth.com. Before we begin, our lawyers would like us to let you know that the opinions expressed during our show tonight are our own and are not the opinions of our respective firms, and that any information presented during the show is general in nature and not specific to your own investment portfolio.
So we usually start off the session with a review of what's been going on in the markets, what's happened today, the past week, and maybe what's coming up for the upcoming week. And we've had yet another good week since we were here last. Last week, the S&P 500 was up about 4%. So we're really putting up some good numbers even year-to-date now, despite a horrible start to the year. I think the numbers are somewhere around 10% if you include dividends for the market, so for the S&P, of course.
Hayden, are you depressed now that the market's run on this long?
It is kind of a weird thing, you know, if you're not fully invested, you're like thinking, oh, geez, I missed the boat. But nah, it's still a lot more fun watching the market go up. Now, one of the things that's of interest for those who track the S&P 500 or follow that as their market indicator is, we're now less than 2% away from the nice and round 1,000 mark. And I'm wondering if we might get some resistance there, similar to kind of what happened when the Dow was really what everybody paid attention to many, many years ago. And when that hit 1,000, that was kind of the peak of the market. And so I don't know. You think that people are focused on the fact that we're about to hit 1,000 on the S&P?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if the second wave of fear hasn't hit, which is the first wave is I better get out or I'm going to lose all my money, and the second one is I better get in because I'm not going to be in this run-up.
Right. Right. Yeah. So yeah, there's definitely some people out there that are worried they're missing the boat, and probably about the time most of them get in, that will be the peak. So I don't know. I'm not sure when that would be. Anyway, for today, there was some interesting news out on new home sales. June new home sales were up 11% from May, down a lot from a year ago, but up 11% from May. And that got people pretty enthused about the housing market. The one bad thing, which didn't get nearly as much play, it just shows you how optimistic and bullish people are becoming, is that prices were actually down. The median price was down 6% from just a month ago. So I don't know if you caught that, but that's definitely offsetting a bit on the fact that home sale prices are not prices, but new home sales were up 11%. So
yeah, I've heard though that foreclosures are a smaller and smaller percentage of that number.
Right.
30%, I guess, is the number now of foreclosures in the overall sales numbers.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that there aren't more out there that haven't yet siphoned through.
Right. Right. And one other thing of interest, which is probably helping sales now and really for the next couple months maybe, depending on how fast people can close, is there's a government incentive for first-time buyers where they get 10% of the home value as a credit or $8,000, whichever is less. And so for people that are looking to buy kind of entry-level homes, condos, whatever, you know, that's a nice incentive, and that's going to run out at the end of November, which means if you're going to buy a house, you got to be looking now, and you probably have to have a deal in place, you know, within a month or so, maybe 2 months at the latest.
So we should be looking at some stimulus there, and you also have the auto stimulus, which is
right.
Coming through and expiring at the end of this year.
Right.
Right. So there's
trade in your clunkers.
Right, exactly. Trade in your clunker if you have 18 miles a gallon or less, I guess.
Right. On the home sale front, one other positive, though, is that the supply, if you use last month's sales, in other words, number of sales, is down to about 8.8 months. That's the lowest since October 2007. So kind of before all the everything hit the fan, we started to, you know, we're back to that level now. One thing people are worried about that track this stuff is that these houses that are in foreclosure or near foreclosure may be coming onto the market. And also there's a lot of people maybe that have held off putting their house on the market till things stabilized a bit. And so the fact that confidence is coming back, let's say, for the housing market may actually reverse things a bit because people start coming into the market with more supply. So I don't know if you think that's likely to happen or not.
Yeah. I think too, loan modifications have been a disappointment, just as far as the numbers of actual loans that have been modified by banks, relatively small.
Yeah.
So lots of things coming out, very hard to predict when this is going to end.
Yeah. The other thing that was interesting today that came out, I believe yesterday, but anyway, Business Week cover story. They declared the end of the recession, and it's kind of ironic because they're famous for their cover story long ago. Actually, we're coming up on the 30-year anniversary of this for their cover story when they declared equities were dead. It's very well known. Cover that said the death of equities. This was actually 30 years ago next month. And so I'm not sure I get inspired by the fact that Business Week is declaring the end of the recession. I actually did some calculations since that cover story. The S&P 500 at the time they did it was at 104.
Oh my gosh.
Today, it's, as I mentioned earlier, it's just about 1,000. So it's up about 10 times. And that doesn't include dividends. So we've got gains of almost 10 times that without dividends. And with dividends, it's actually about 16 times over that time period. So it's been a really good run since they declared the death of equity. So they were wrong about that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure that bonds had the same run over that period.
No. Bonds probably did pretty well, but not quite as good, I imagine. Some of the things that happened last week also that helped prop the market, leading indicators came in with another increase. And we also saw existing home sales, which is different from the new home sales we mentioned earlier, were also up. And so overall, a very good week for the markets. And generally, the news was much better. Earnings was another big plus. We generally saw some good news on that front. Much more companies reporting better than expected, with the one caveat that's on earnings. On revenues, actually, it wasn't nearly as positive. A lot of companies disappointed on the revenue front, which means companies are cutting costs much faster than expected. And that's good, but it can't be sustained.
Getting back to, you know, exactly where we are, the chicken or the egg, if the earnings come up, then the PE is adjusted and becomes a smaller number.
Yep.
And so, in fact, even though the market seems lofty today, if we in fact keep having earnings prices, we could end up with, you know, an average PE.
Right. That's true. Yeah. And we're getting there, too. I mean, the PE is about 16. The market has run up a lot. But earnings estimates have been coming up a little bit, not significantly, but at least they're coming up now after plunging over the last 12 months or so. So and then for this week, there's some positive or not some positive, but some things going on. We're going to get consumer confidence numbers tomorrow. There's also GDP numbers coming in at the end of the week. The estimates are for down 1.5% for the quarter, last quarter, that is. And so although that's not all that exciting, it's a lot better than the more than 5% decline we saw at the first quarter of the year.
And I think important to note, too, CIT, a company that lends to a tremendous number of retailers and small businesses, was actually helped out by the bondholders out there. So and so the market kind of rescued itself, and there was no need for the feds to step in and rescue it. I think that's a huge shot in the arm to the market as well.
Yep.
The fact that we had the potential bankruptcy of a company looming, and the market was able to rescue itself without seeking out federal help.
I agree.
So the credit markets are definitively healing.
Yeah, they are healing. And we're going to obviously talk about credit markets, specifically municipal bonds tonight, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But and then to kind of wrap up what's happened this week, or what's going to happen this week, I should say, We're getting a lot of more earnings reports, actually probably the biggest number of earnings, although not as many like big name companies. But of the bigger ones this week, we got Honeywell and Verizon this week, which was there wasn't a lot of news there.
Lackluster.
Coming up, we're going to get ConocoPhillips, Time Warner, ExxonMobil, Disney, and Chevron. All of those are big companies that could have a big impact, and the a lot of big oil companies are coming up as well. So it's a big earnings week. It's going to, again, have a big impact. And expectations are gradually rising so that, you know, whereas when we started the earnings season, companies could just do, kind of less bad, as we were saying. It's now getting to the point where expectations have already come up because of the early reporters. And now companies really probably have to come in with better expectations to try and get their stock price up. So
when we come back, we'll be talking about the different types of risks that investors need to be considering when they put together a portfolio of bonds, especially muni bonds. Thanks for listening.
Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
Skyrocketing cost of living are forcing mature Americans to take a new look at reverse mortgages. Today, over 300,000 seniors have tapped new monthly income and reduced debt with this program. Maybe you've heard, but just don't understand reverse mortgage yet. Simply, a reverse mortgage is the opposite of traditional mortgage, where the lender pays you to live in your home. Confused? Hi, it's Dean George. I found a great resource in Comfortable Retirement, the free service that's referred over $2 billion in home value to their specialists. They can help see if this government-backed program is right for you. So if you're a mature American over 62 with significant equity in your home or condo, call Comfortable Retirement right now. You'll get their new information kit, DVD, and a free no-obligation consultation. And unlike everybody else, you'll be assigned your own personal reverse mortgage specialist. Go ahead and secure your future with Comfortable Retirement.
Call for your free information kit at 1-800-518-1300. That's 800-518-1300 for your reverse mortgage information kit. 800-518-1300.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
With the cost of everything always on the rise, I'm happy to tell you about a value that stays constant, Bella Costa. That's right. Bella Costa is a fantastic family-run Italian restaurant since 1986. Bella Costa has one of the largest selections of entrees under $10 anywhere, with dozens of choices like chicken or eggplant parmesan, baked salmon, and of course the chicken Bella Costa with ziti, broccoli, and wine. And when you do check out Bella Costa, you need to request the ever-popular Chef's Chicken Special, a Bella Costa favorite. Bella Costa uses the finest, freshest ingredients, quality food, unsurpassed hospitality, and of course, the best value in family dining. Bella Costa's early specials are also available for takeout, and you have to check out the number one Sunday brunch in all of Metro West, the Bella Costa Sunday Brunch. Bella Costa, 147 Kitchiterit Road, Framingham, that's the Colonial Shopping Center, where routes 126 and 30 intersect. Bella Costa, easy to find, easy to remember, and always quick to return. On the web at bellacosta.net.
Hello again, you're listening to On the Money. I'm Hayden Traub. I run my own firm here in Needham, and if you'd like more information about the firm, you can go to traubcapital.com.
And I'm Gary Pomerantz, the Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management. For more information about our firm or to get on the email list for our economic outlook, You could visit our website at www.lexingtonwealth.com. The economic outlook is something that we come up with on a weekly basis. So on to the focus of tonight's show, municipal bonds and the safety of municipal portfolios. With state budgets under extreme fiscal duress and high-quality ratings of many states in question, today we take a look under the hood of municipal bond portfolios. What are the risks inherent in bond portfolios today? How do the bond markets work? What should taxable investors be thinking about when they set out to create the portion of their portfolio that is supposed to protect them from significant losses when the equity markets lose their way?
If you'd like to call in for tonight's show, call 888-205-2263. Again, 888-205-2263. To kind of talk about bonds first, and then we're going to get into municipal bonds. Generally, bonds are kind of the wallflower of the party. When things are going really well, nobody's interested in bonds. But the reality is, you know, if you buy high-quality, short to intermediate bonds, which generally have less risk, they generate pretty good interest and obviously more stable returns than investing in stocks, and then provide a good balance to your portfolio. They also have low correlations with stocks, so that makes them a very good diversifier. And last year, they were the place to be, basically, especially if you own very safe, like, treasury bonds. Now, tonight's topic is going to be municipal bonds, and the reason you would want to invest in municipal bonds as opposed to other types of bonds is really if you have taxable money that you're thinking about investing. If you're talking about anything like IRAs or anything like that,
absolutely
inappropriate. No place for municipal bonds. But the interesting thing about municipal bonds for many, many years, most periods of time, municipal bonds generally have yielded less than treasuries because of the fact that you don't pay federal tax on them. And today, we're at the point now where generally municipal bonds are yielding similar or in some cases even a little bit higher than treasury bonds. So you're actually getting a higher yield than the typical treasury bond fund or portfolio, and yet you don't pay federal taxes. If you buy municipal bonds for the state that you live in, assuming that you have a state income tax, which most states do, actually eliminate that portion as well.
But you don't get anything for nothing. There's a reason why, right, that these municipal bonds are actually trading at higher values, and that's because people are worried about the balance sheets of the states right now.
Right. And in particular, you know, California was in the news quite a bit lately with their problems and the deficits that they were facing having to correct. And so people were worried about defaults. That's part of the deal and why the yields got so much better. But the reality is, if you look over the very long run, even during periods of similar distress, it's actually very rare that municipal bonds will default. And so much, much rarer than corporate bonds, for example. And so you definitely have an opportunity here. Although we'll talk about the risks as well, as we always want to. Mm-hmm. But this is probably a good opportunity to look at municipal bonds, given the difference. And one of the big things is what people refer to as the taxable equivalent yield. And just to kind of throw some numbers out there, right now you could probably get a municipal bond portfolio through a fund that yields about 4%. And typically when you hear the term taxable equivalent yield, they're quoting 28% federal tax rates. And if that is your tax rate, then you're going to get an equivalent yield of about 5.5%. That's a pretty good return these days. I know it may not sound so exciting given how strong the stock market's been lately, but it's a whole lot better than what you'd get in the treasury market, yeah, or even some corporate bonds.
And really, how high you up in the ladder of federal income taxes really makes
right.
a big difference.
Right. Now, if you were in the top tax bracket at 35%, then you're getting kind of the equivalent of 6% yields. And now it's getting pretty interesting.
It is. So, we're getting, right, for a period there, we were actually getting equity-like returns going
right.
back 3 months ago.
Right, exactly. So, and if yeah. you're in a high-tax state, like we're right. here in Massachusetts, if you get interest income, that's typically taxed at 10%. And so if you're able to buy Massachusetts bonds, that eliminates the state tax as well. Now you're talking about yields of close to 7%. So in terms of taxable equivalent yield. So they're pretty appealing here, and we think that's the reason we wanted to talk about them tonight.
If you'd like to, there are risks. I mean, if you would like to call in and ask any questions about municipal bond portfolios, then the phone number is 888-205-2263. And actually, on the phone, we have a guest with us tonight who's a specialist in this area. His name is Michael Schroeder. He's the president and chief investment officer of Wasmer Schroeder & Company, a municipal and taxable bond management firm that oversees over $2 billion in assets, and they serve high net worth individuals, wealth management groups, and institutions. It's a pleasure to have you join us, Michael.
Gary and Hayden, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you very much. And so what we're going to address now is just a quick primer on bonds, and I can't think of anybody better than you to give it, where we'd like to sort of address the concepts of maturity risk and credit risk, inflation risk and liquidity risk, and how those all settle into a muni bond portfolio as you're trying to create it.
Right. Well, I heard some of your previous comments, and the first point is that munis are appropriate mostly for income and safety of principal. They're not; they're a little less appropriate for people seeking total return. Although you can get appreciation from time to time, that's not the primary focus of municipal bonds, and shouldn't be. They are very appropriate vehicles for that. And as you noted, the tax exempt, both state and federal, in the case of Massachusetts, is very attractive, even in this market. You mentioned the taxable equivalent yields. One of the things that we look at is the ratio of municipal yields to treasury yields. Right now, for a 10-year municipal bond, that's 87%. So 3.2% for a tax-free municipal bond versus 3.7% for a treasury bond. And I know you noted that as recently as the first quarter of this year, those ratios were well above 100%. Even though they've come down, historically, that compares to an average of 81%. So they're still very attractive, even on a taxable equivalent basis, with the recent rally in yields. In terms of building a portfolio, some of the other things that we look at is diversification. Extremely important, particularly for individuals who are seeking to build their own portfolio of individual municipal bonds, whether it be with a professional money management firm, or through a broker, it's extremely important to diversify your holdings.
Just so you're aware, Michael, we have 2 minutes basically until the break. So, but we wanted to talk about maturity risk and credit risk within the portfolios. So,
go ahead.
As you're structuring it with rates pretty much at very low levels at this point, as far as the Fed is concerned, how are you structuring portfolios to with the prospect of potentially increasing rates in the future as a hedge against inflation and increasing rates?
Well, great question. And one of the things that we do is we don't make big bets on interest rates because declining interest rates or yields is a risk in addition to the risk of rising rates. So what we're doing currently is we're laddering in a mix of maturities all the way out to 15 years. And depending on the client, we may have a heavier weighting in the shorter end of the maturity schedule versus the longer. And the further out you go, the higher the yield.
Okay, I'm going to hold you off there. You're listening to On the Money, and we'll come back and we'll have more questions about municipal bonds just after the break.
If you'd like to call in, the phone number is 888-205-2263. Again, it's 888-205-2263. We're talking about bonds, specifically municipal bonds. So if you have any questions on that front, please give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. Thanks.
Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
You too can be successful at real estate investing. The Eastern Massachusetts Real Estate Investors Association provides a networking and educational venue for both new and seasoned investors alike. Eastern Mass REIA meets the second Thursday of each month at 6:30 p.m. at the Rockland Holiday Inn. We sponsor educational events, seminars, and mentoring for investors of all levels. We are the number one source in the greater Boston area to get deals done. We are open to the public. Join us for our next meeting. Visit EasternMassREIA.com.
Take the Plymouth Ferry to Provincetown. Cruise in comfort and enjoy your trip across Cape Cod Bay without the hassles of a lengthy ride in Cape traffic. En route, enjoy a narrated tour of historic Plymouth Harbor. Before you know it, you're in Provincetown. Spend the day poking around unique shops and galleries. Enjoy a relaxing lunch in one of P-Town's famous restaurants. Experience Cape Cod's National Seashore. Captain John Boat's large, comfortable vessels feature an enclosed galley with your favorite foods and beverages, including cocktails, and a helpful, friendly crew. So travel to P-Town in style with Captain John Boats. Reservations call 508-747-2400. That's 508-747-2400. 10 a.m. departures daily from Mayflower to State Pier in Plymouth. Returns at 6 p.m. Take the express route to P-Town. Call 508-747-2400.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
And now, another reason to switch to Geico.
Every month we get lots of letters telling us how much folks like Geico's claim service. And I quote, "The adjuster assigned to my claim was incredible. He walked me through everything." Then there's this one. Geico.com is very useful and lets you track your claims. And this. "I filed a claim at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon and my car was in the shop at 10 a.m. on Friday." And my personal favorite, "Easy Squeezy Lemon Peasy."
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Hello, you're listening to On the Money. This is Hayden Traub. If you'd like to call in and ask any questions, the number is 888-205-2263. Again, 888-205-2263.
And this is Gary Pomerantz, and the focus of tonight's show is municipal bonds and the safety of municipal portfolios during these times of state fiscal duress. Joining us today is Michael Schroeder, the President and Chief Investment Officer of Wasmer Schroeder & Company, a municipal and taxable bond management firm. And what we were talking about just before the break was how individuals should be structuring their portfolios with the likelihood that rates will be increasing at some point in the future, even though the Fed is saying right now they're holding off. At some point, the economy will actually start to right itself. And when that happens, the Fed will be in a conundrum. They'll have to actually put on the brakes. And when that happens, they will move rates up. And so with nowhere to go but up within the bond portfolios, as far as interest rates are concerned, we were asking Michael how he is positioning his portfolios and for the potential of a rising rate environment. So, Michael, back to you.
Yes, and in a rising rate environment, there are some things that you can do to protect a fixed income portfolio. For example, obviously keeping a higher concentration of shorter maturities, say 3 years and under. You can purchase some premium bonds, which give you more income to reinvest quickly.
Could you explain what premium bonds are for our listeners?
Premium bonds are basically bonds that are trading above par, essentially because they pay a coupon rate, which is the fixed semiannual interest rate that the bond pays, that is higher than the current market rate for a given bond that would be sold at face value of 100. So a bond may be trading at, say, 105 cents on the dollar because it pays a 5% coupon, where a current market bond is coming out at 4%.
Okay. Thank you. And then, so you're positioning the portfolio with 1 to 3 year durations. Let's say, what percentage of the portfolio?
Well, it really is a function largely of your view on interest rates. So if you think we're getting closer to that point where rates are going to start rising again, then you start shifting and probably want to have a good at least one-third to maybe even half your portfolio coming due in 5 years or less.
Right. Michael, this is Hayden. One thing to clarify, maybe you can confirm this, is although the Fed will have to raise rates, meaning short-term rates, the Fed funds rate, it isn't necessarily a given that when they do that, that interest rates on the longer bonds like muni bonds and so on will necessarily go up, correct?
Correct. That's correct. The Fed doesn't. They would like to be able to control long rates by virtue of some of the activities that they've done, like buying mortgage-backed securities or even buying treasuries to try to keep rates low and mortgages affordable, kind of stimulate the economy. But at some point, it becomes a lot more difficult for them to do that, and the markets basically take over.
Right. So are you, relative to kind of your normal position, are you positioned for higher rates in the bond market now, or you think it's still too early for that?
Well, I think the expense, the cost to bond investors of waiting to try to time the markets by keeping too much money in cash, as you know, money market funds are yielding almost zero now,
right,
and T-bills, same with T-bills, is that cost is really very high right now, and so trying to guess the exact timing by having too much money in cash and time the market is not very advisable, and we're not doing that. So we are going somewhat out on the yield curve and creating a mix of various different types of bonds, both callable and non-callable, and a mix of maturities to try to mitigate that timing risk.
Just to clarify, callable means that the governments can pay them off if they're callable?
Yes, most municipal bonds have a 10-year call where the issuer can call the bond away from the bondholder.
Which means basically they'll pay you back your money.
Right, they're going to give you back your money. Now, outstanding bonds, if you buy a bond that's already outstanding, you buy that bond from a dealer and it was issued 5 years ago, it may only have 5 years left of call protection instead of the original 10. So that's important to note.
Right, okay. One thing we talked about earlier in the show was default rates with municipal bonds and the fact that, you know, historically those rates have been fairly low and lower than corporates. Do you have any color on that? In other words, what the historical rates have been? And
yeah, the 10-year average default rate for all investment grade municipal bonds is 0.1%, and that rate is 2.1% for all investment grade corporate bonds. Now that's just looking back over a 10-year period. Obviously, we're participating in a period here that's where we've gone through a recession. We're seeing tax receipts decline. There's one recession in that data set. But if you go back further, the data is still, even if you go back to 1970, which some of the studies do, those statistics hold up fairly well. And a large reason for that is municipalities have a very diverse revenue stream. They have the ability to cut expenses, and they, by law, must balance their budgets.
Right. And what about California? They've been in the news a lot lately, as we mentioned earlier. Do you have an opinion on what's going on there and whether investors should avoid that state's municipal bonds or whether maybe they're a good deal here given, you know, that the yields might be a bit higher there?
Right. They can be a good deal. Again, if you're going to participate in, say, a California municipal bond fund that has a lot of diversification, that would be appropriate. Or if you have enough money to build a diversified portfolio of various different municipal bonds in the state. But just picking one or two is probably not advisable for individual investors, and the professionals have a lot more access to research. There's risks there, but there's also a lot of opportunities because a lot of the situation there is not very widely or well understood with regard to functionally how the bondholders are paid vis-a-vis the other expenses of the state.
To our listeners, if you'd like to call in, you have questions about maybe your own municipal bond portfolio, 888-205-2263. You mentioned adequate diversification. Within big states, you can get diversification, I suppose, even if it's all within that state. Would that be correct? For
yes.
Those holders that are, you know, just having California bonds, holding California bonds, or New York bonds because they're triple tax free, or Massachusetts bonds, should they be worried that there isn't enough national diversification in their portfolios?
We are currently structuring portfolios at about 50% in-state and 50% out-of-state for the clients like Massachusetts residents where there is an income tax. Some states like Texas and Florida, Nevada do not have a state income tax, so in that case we're indifferent and we can go pretty much anywhere. But even in, and especially in New York, where the income tax is very high and they even have a city tax, it, you know, fortunately, New York is one of the heavier issuers of municipal bonds, and so there's a lot of issuers to pick from, a lot of supply, as we say. And in that case, it's still possible to find a lot of diversification. But if you take a high-tax state like a very small state like Montana that hardly ever issues any bonds but has a high tax rate, you're probably not going to get much diversification there. So just chasing the tax exemption is probably not the best way to go about it.
Michael, is that 50% that you mentioned, is that sorry, is that normal for you know, for looking back over time, or are you putting less in that specific state's bonds given the current risks?
That would be lower than the historical norm given the risks, and we started that some time ago in anticipation of, you know, of the economic cycle. I'm not saying we timed things exactly right, we don't have a crystal ball, but going forward, diversification is one of the primary methods by which most bond managers, including us, control risk in a bond portfolio, and it's extremely important to diversify by geography in addition to bond type and maturities.
If somebody had the expertise or maybe a manager that could guide them, is there a given number of individual bonds that you think you would need to get the right diversification in, or, and combined with that, is there a right dollar amount maybe that you need to do that?
Typically, and there's no hard and fast rule to this, you will see it vary by manager, but you know, generally we tell people if you have less than $500,000, you're going to be better off in a bond fund, and if you or maybe an ETF. If you have more than that, then you can adequately diversify. You can get at least 20 to 30 holdings, and that's typically about the number that we like to target.
And that's buying at 25,000, roughly.
Correct.
Right. Right. Just to clarify, an ETF is an exchange traded fund, just for our listeners.
Which you can buy like a stock, you know, on the market. Just, you could go to, into iShares on the internet and you could find out all about them.
Right, right. There's actually quite a few municipal bond ETFs now, exchange traded funds. So there's pretty good opportunities there.
Right.
What about on the high yield front, Michael? You know, high yield bonds at the corporate level have done well. Do you have any input on that?
Actually, Michael, I'm going to hold you off on that question. We're going to, listeners have to wait in bated anticipation because we're going to come back and we're going to talk more about municipal bonds. And we have Michael Schroeder here as a guest from Wasmer & Schroeder. We're very happy to have you here, Michael. Thank you. And we'll be coming back just in about a few minutes' time. Thanks for listening.
If you'd like to call in, it's 888-205-2263. Again, 888-205-2263.
Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
Hello?
Hey, Dave, it's George. How are you doing? I'm calling to ask you a question.
Hey, Margie and I are doing great. We're living at North Hill now and loving it. What's the question?
Sarah and I have been waiting to move to North Hill for some time, but we haven't been able to sell our house. I see your house is still on the market, and yet you've made the move. How did you do that?
Easy. North Hill has something called the Dream Bridge Loan. It provides up to 12 months of interest-free bridge financing. It's a terrific offer. You should call on it.
Interesting. Sarah would be pleased if I told her we could move to North Hill before the house is sold. sold. Thanks for the information.
One other thing, George. North Hill also has a new monthly service fee incentive. Depending on when you come in, you can have your service fee waived 30, 60, and even 90 days. Check that offer out as well.
Thanks, Dave. I'm glad I called you.
To learn more about North Hill's Dream Bridge Loan and Service Fee Incentive Program, call 781-433-6524. 781-433-6524.
Trout Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Trout Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
You want pain relief that's fast? You want pain relief that's strong? Then you want Advil Liquid Gels. They're faster and stronger on tough pain than Tylenol Rapid Release Gels. Advil Liquid Gels. They rush real liquid relief right to wherever you hurt, so you can forget about your pain and get back to your day. Advil Liquid Gels. Liquid fast. Advil strong.
Brands are trademarks of their respective owners. Use as directed.
Hi, you're listening to On the Money. This is Hayden Traub. We have with us tonight Michael Schroeder, President and Chief Investment Officer of Wassmer Schroeder.
I'm Gary Pomerantz. I'm the Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, based here in Lexington, Mass. And Hayden, why don't you...
Sure. Yeah, before we went to the break, Michael, I was asking you about high-yield municipal bonds, so maybe you could come back to that question.
Well, high-yield municipal bonds are typically referred to as below investment grade category. Sometimes they're not rated at all by one of the rating companies, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, or Fitch. But there can be sometimes a crossover there, and you can find some high-yielding investment-grade bonds. So when we talk high-yield, typically I'm referring to the below-investment-grade, or what used to be known as junk bonds. They had great returns year-to-date through June, up about, I think, 25% on average, give or take. And last year that number was down about 35% for the whole year, 2008. So big down year last year, but a big rebound so far this year. As I said before, you know, typically municipal bonds are for income and safety, not total return. So this would be a totally different kind of an animal for investors to consider if they're so inclined to take that type of risk and look for total returns.
How do the yields compare today on high yield municipals as opposed to investment grade municipals?
Well, typically, most of the high-yield bonds are found in just a handful of sectors, including healthcare, some hospitals, some retirement communities, assisted living facilities, and the like, private or charter schools, multifamily housing, and some industrial revenue bonds, which typically are really corporate issuers issuing through the conduit facility of the municipality. And that's typically also where you find the bulk of the defaults in the municipal market.
Right. I want to stop you for a moment because lots of things mentioned that I think most listeners won't understand. So revenue bonds are not backed by the full faith and credit of the state, right? So that means, in fact,
right.
Okay.
They're typically backed by a revenue source that's confined to a project, what we typically call project financing. So the hospitals might be the sole source of repayment of the bonds, and it may not be a community-owned hospital. Something like Massachusetts General type, you know, a big facility like that, or, you know, the Mayo Clinic or the like, with a big system or even affiliated with a university. It might just be a standalone small community hospital, and that's very risky.
And for that, so even for the MGH probably wouldn't be a high yield bond, right? Or might it be?
Which one? I'm sorry.
Mass General Hospital.
A large hospital like that, probably well funded. But if you were talking about a smaller hospital in some small town, maybe that could potentially be a high yield.
Yeah, they may not have a rating at all, or if they do, it might be in the low investment grade category, like triple B, or even slightly below.
And how do they? How do high yield municipal bonds, as far as the risk within the high yield muni category, compare to high yield corporate bonds?
There are some similar patterns there, more similar there than what you would see in the investment grade, what we call the essential purpose bonds, you know, the GOs, the water and sewer, electric utilities and the like. Those are going to be where your defaults are very low, but when you get into the high yield sector, you're going to see a higher correlation between corporate and the high yield muni.
And GO bonds are bonds that are backed by the full faith and credit. So it stands for general obligation.
General obligation is typically backed by the general fund and or the ad valorem taxing capability of the municipality. It could be a school district, it could be a county, or it could be a city or a state.
So things for listeners to really be paying attention to if they were ever trying to build their own portfolios. Their GO bonds would be the safest bonds that they could purchase within their portfolios. And then the revenue bonds that they purchase, really have to pay attention to the credit quality of those bonds, and you really need to be in the know about what you're purchasing.
Fortunately for investors, the disclosure level for municipal bonds has gotten better and continues to improve, especially this year with the launch of EMMA, which is sort of the sister companion to EDGAR, which is the disclosure for corporates. So investors can go on the Internet and actually look up and see disclosure documents for municipal issuers, but they would need to do that if they're going to get involved in building a portfolio, yes.
Michael, one of the things that we've done with some clients is to use some closed-end municipal bond funds, and they traded at very big discounts during the heart of the crisis, you know, discounts of over 20%, which obviously boosts the yield to very high levels. Those have come in a lot, and so we're less enthused than we were at the time. But any thoughts on that in terms of the attractiveness or the risks associated with those?
Well, for certain amounts of money, they can be very appropriate. If you have a very large net worth, they're probably not going to be liquid enough for what your purposes are, and you want to diversify. And the other disadvantage is that some of them do use leverage within their structure, and then that can magnify returns when the market's doing well, but it can magnify your losses as well when things aren't doing well. And I think that's one of the key distinctions between individual bonds or even an open-end mutual fund and a closed-end fund is that leverage.
Right. Yeah, I think some investors get very excited about the closed-end funds because they see the yield, but they don't realize that there's leverage that kind of boosts the yield. So,
right.
That's one of the risks that we try and point out.
And another question is, and I think it's probably the most difficult question I could probably ask, is I'm asked very often by my clients how the bond markets work. And it's a sort of a Byzantine system out there where you're buying things with bid-ask spreads. You're holding on to inventories. It's difficult to know what the purchaser of the bond actually paid for the bond when you're buying it. So could you speak to that a little bit? I think that it really leans itself towards hiring a professional money manager instead of trying to get out there and do it yourself, where you might end up taking a bath on the price of the bonds that you're purchasing.
Right. There have been some studies about the functioning of the municipal market because, as I mentioned, the disclosure, while it's been getting better and improving, and it has been a little bit more arcane than the corporate or certainly treasury market. There's a study done in July of 2004 by the SEC, and you can access it actually on the Internet by going to their website. It talks about they did a one-year study, period, which is fairly typical of the market, and looked over that period to look at the bid-ask spreads on municipal bonds and the activity, the number of trades, and there's some interesting data in that report. But you know, basically, you're looking at about 1.5 to 2% during that study period was the average bid and ask spread. That would be the difference between the price the dealer buys a bond from a client for and then marks it up and sells it to another client for.
So I just want to clarify for our listeners on the bid-ask. Bid-ask means the bid is what a dealer would buy the bond from them, or what price they would pay the dealer, that is.
Correct.
And the ask is what their you know, willing to buy at. So just to kind of explain
what the purchaser is willing to buy at. So go into a car dealership, and it would be the wholesale value, right, what the dealer purchased the car for, and then what you bought it for.
Right.
Right.
Difference. So if there was like a bid ask spread of, when you say 2%, you're saying the bid was 98 and the ask was, say, 100 for the prices. Is that
yes.
What you're, is that correct. The 2%? Okay. Yeah, just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, Michael, we have about a minute and a half left to connote to our listeners all of the wisdom that you can manage in that short period of time if I stop talking. And so my question to you is, we talked a little bit about diversification, both geographic, and we talked about maturity diversification, and we talked a little bit about credit diversification. You have to summarize what clients really be looking for if they're building their own portfolios right now. Can you summarize that for us?
Yeah, I think that in summary, you want to remember that municipal bonds are primarily appropriate for income and for safety of principal. There may be periods where they can be less liquid than the treasury market, so you want to make sure when you buy a bond that you bought it with the thought in mind that you're going to hold it to maturity, even though there is a market for it and you can sell it. You want to have diversification of your holdings, both geographically and as well as by type of issuer, some GOs, some revenue bonds. Solid investment-grade revenue bonds, and you want to have multiple maturities. You don't want to have too much of your portfolio all coming due in 1 year in case rates are really low that year. You're going to have reinvestment risk. Same thing if interest rates rise. You don't want to have all long maturities or you're going to have a decline in your principal. And if you need to tap your portfolio for liquidity, you'll be forced to sell at a loss.
Less than $500,000, you should be looking at mutual funds and not finding a separate bond manager like Wasmer, for instance.
Correct.
And if you have more than $500,000, you could seek out the assistance of a bond manager that could actually put that kind of a portfolio together.
Right.
And on the inflation risk, I know that there's some bonds that have inflation protection, but those are pretty limited. Is that correct?
Yeah, they have treasury. In the treasury market, they're a lot more liquid. TIPS is appropriate. People refer to them, and they do have MIPS in the muni market, municipal inflation protected securities, but they're very rare, very hard to find, and I would advise most individual investors to avoid them.
Okay, thanks,
Michael. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. You've been listening to On the Money with Gary Pomerantz and Hayden Traub. We'll see you next week.
For the latest financial headlines or to contact the host, go to bostonbusinessradio.com and join us every day at 6 p.m. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of their respective parties and not those of this show's producers or the station. You're listening to On the Money on WBNW AM 1120 and the Money Matters Network.